everyone. I'm Dr. Sidel Ross, and I would like to welcome you to episode 3 of Prescriptions in Psalm. Today, I thought it would be a good idea to take a look at music-based interventions in healthcare facilities from a practical perspective. As a volunteer artist in the New York City area, I have been involved in efforts to make music available to patients and residents in some of our area's healthcare facilities. Today, I have the pleasure of welcoming a very special guest to the program. She is someone who can share her experience of creating music-based programs that have been embraced by various healthcare facilities in the New York City area and beyond. The gracious and super talented Camille Zamora is here to chat with me. Camille is the co-founder of Sing for Hope, which is a New York City-based nonprofit organization with a global mission to make the arts accessible to all. Camille is a professional opera singer with a broad repertoire that ranges from Mozart to tango. She's a graduate of the Juilliard School in New York City and has presented and performed at a number of noteworthy venues, including the U.S. Capitol and the United Nations. Camille is a regular arts and culture contributor to the Huffington Post, and she has been named one of the top 50 Americans in philanthropy by Town and Country, as well as one of CNN's most intriguing people. I could go on and on, highlighting her numerous accomplishments. Welcome, Camille, and thank you so much for being here with me today.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
This is such a treat for me. I thought it would be a nice idea for you to tell us how the organization Sing for Hope originated and how it has evolved over the years to become what it is today.
Absolutely, Sidel. And I have to say, what a joy for me to be speaking with you. I'm such your fan. So thank you. Definitely.
Thank you.
So Sing for Hope, you know, we are so fortunate because we have amazing people like you in our orbit. And we started off, like so many things, as just a conversation between friends, myself and my wonderful best friend, fellow soprano, Monica Eunice at Juilliard. I think we both, when we were there in the early 2000s, had questions about, you know, frankly, about the delivery systems for the arts. And I think, you know, obviously so many of us who are in the arts were drawn to this because we're drawn to truth and to light and to the sort of positive energy and the hope that art naturally embodies. And yet, the fact is, a lot of times in the business, there can be aspects that feel, I don't want to say antithetical to that, but that, you know, just that just the simple human connection sometimes is harder to find. And in particular, it's harder to find when you're thinking about communities in need. And, you know, while it was such a joy to be at Juilliard, one of the things that we found when we were there is that, you know, especially at that time, I think in the early 2000s, there still was this sort of idea that Lincoln Center is this, you know, very elite institution. And that's certainly, you know, that's certainly no one's intention. I mean, Lincoln Center itself is powered by, you know, a great vision of freedom and democracy and warmth and welcome. But the reality is, I think a lot of people don't realize that. And many people don't feel invited in. And, you know, I think a lot of this came to a head for Monica and myself, you know, quite honestly, around September 11th. You know, we were there on September 11th, 2001. And like so many New Yorkers, life changed forever for
Absolutely.
Us that day. And Juilliard actually shares a city block with a firehouse that was among the first responders that day. And they lost, I think, something like 12 of their brothers that day. And it was just, you know, time just stopped.
As you're speaking, it's all coming back to me. I was at school at Columbia pursuing my doctor of medicine degree. So it's all coming back to me.
Do you know? And so, I mean, it really, in some weird ways, it seems like forever ago. And in some ways, it seems like yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, at that moment, I think more than ever, we just stopped, you know, as a city and just said, what are we doing and how can we help and what can we possibly do? I think everyone in every discipline, but in particular for those of us, you know, I think who had been at Juilliard, you know, it was this incredibly special place, but it also felt very you know, sort of far away from what was going on. At least it did for me. And so, you know, we just thought, okay, let's, you know, take a risk and literally just go onto the street and sing some simple songs for these guys as they're waiting for their brothers to return. And as, you know, you remember those horrible early days when the signs were still up with people's faces.
That's right.
We thought that people would be coming back. And, you know, neighbors were bringing flowers and family members were waiting for the brothers to come back. And this was on Thursday of that, you know, September.
Yeah, so 2 days after.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, 2 days after. And we just went and we sang. And these big guys.
My goodness.
You know, I think
what
was so powerful for us was, you know, I'll never forget this wonderful young tenor named LeFrederick standing forward and just starting to sing Amazing Grace. And these big fire guys, you know, you had this sense that they hadn't really released emotion yet. And they just began to weep. And we just sort of all kind of united in that moment through song. And it was such a simple, organic thing. And
that was a moment of healing, at least the start of healing for a number of people, I would imagine.
You know, it really was, Sidel. It really felt like that. And I think certainly for us, you know, as artists, it allowed us that moment of feeling that there really was a place and a need for this thing. And, you know, the truth is, you know, the joy of being at Juilliard is that, you know, it is this sort of crucible for excellence and for achievement. And this felt like, okay, because we have this incredibly honed particular skill, we can bring it in, we can bring the arts in a way that have such sort of high frequency in all senses. You know, there's this resonance that we can bring that can really change things and that can really generate hope. And I think that is what we felt that day. And in the weeks and months that followed, more and more singers and more instrumentalists, more friends came together. And we just would go occasionally and start singing at firehouses. And then it extended to singing for schools and hospitals. And, you know, here we are 13 years later. And now what we have is this wonderful, really a movement. We have a roster of over 5,000 artists who volunteer and they share their wonderful talents, all different kinds of talents, from puppet making to obviously to singing, but also to dance and acting and filmmaking. And they share their talents in programs all over the city and now actually beyond New York City as well.
Yes. Well, this is absolutely wonderful. I was really touched by that story. And, you know, you touched on something that kind of brings me to my next question. In the early stages of Sing for Hope, when you were singing at healthcare facilities in particular, I think there was such a need there. And there is still such a need because, you know, as a physician, I spend a lot of my time in healthcare facilities. And what I have found is that sometimes it can be very isolating.
Yes.
Yeah, very isolating. Can be somewhat cold.
Yes.
People often feel very alone and afraid.
Right, right.
And even though, you know, the goal is to promote healing and wellness, sometimes it's hard for patients and their loved ones to really feel, to feel that. Again, because it can be so cold and isolating and people often feel so afraid and alone.
Really, you know, Sidel, it's interesting to hear that coming from a physician because, of course, you know, systems become put in place and then they take on a life of their own. And I think, you know, certainly all of the beautiful people that power healthcare in New York City, the last thing that anybody ever wanted was to give a patient an experience that feels cold, you know, but the reality.
Absolutely.
Exactly. But the reality of the day-to-day management of the complexities of a healthcare system, you know, these healthcare facilities that we are working in every day at Sing for Hope. I mean, the reality is there's just so much to get through that human touch, that touch from the heart sometimes goes missing. And, you know, to me, that is the simple, beautiful, clear role of the arts, is it is the direct path to the heart.
Absolutely.
And it also addresses spirit. You know, I love the etymology of the word spirit from Latin spiritum, which means both soul and breath. And it's a way that we can, you know, communally really breathe together is through inspiration. You know, again, this wonderful sense that has both a physical meaning, inspiration, the part of the respiratory system that is the
sure,
intake of breath.
Yes,
it's
yes.
Not only the intake of breath, it's the intake of attitude and spirit and emotion. And I think if we can, you know, address each other on that level in a way that feels organic and not invasive, not inappropriate, but that feels welcome. You know, I think that is a whole other dimension of healing that frankly will speed our medical healing metrics right along. I do think that, you know, the art to capturing the metrics of the arts and their efficacy in a hospital setting, I think, you know, there are complexities to that. But I do believe that we're really starting now to see this, the studies that are saying that, like, yes, in fact, if we do have the arts for patients, if we have creativity and creative outlets for patients in a recuperation phase, they recuperate more quickly.
Absolutely.
You know, if we have the arts and in particular music available to people with dementia and Alzheimer's, we see less of a need for psychotropic medication. So there are really all these very targeted sort of arts interventions that we're now able to sort of see and begin to explore. And I feel like the field is only just beginning. And yet, ironically enough, you know, as you know, Sadel, this is the oldest story in the book as well, because it's how we communally have always healed.
Absolutely.
it's a funny thing, right?
Yeah, it's nice that, you know, we're coming around to this again. I did a presentation a few years ago at a palliative care conference at my hospital. And in my introduction, I mentioned that this is not new.
Right. Yeah, no, it's really true.
This is not new. Music has been an integral part of healing for centuries in certain cultures.
You know, it's a fascinating thing. Monica and I had the joy this year of going to Athens, Greece. I had never been to Greece. And this was with a really, really special opportunity, which was that Sing for Hope received a grant from a European foundation to bring 5 Sing for Hope pianos to refugee populations in the refugee camps outside of Athens. We worked with El Sistema Greece, an amazing organization that does sort of social cohesion through music, and we brought these 5 gorgeous artist-designed pianos to Skaramangas camp and to other areas in and around Athens that serve refugee populations. And they don't just serve refugees upon entry. They also serve the larger cause of migration, integration. You know, how do we begin to truly welcome and kind of weave these threads of these migrant populations? And in particular, in Greece, it's such a portal. You know, there's such an influx. So you know, there's something as simple as an artist-designed piano, you know, this brightly colored piano, really does serve as this sort of spark and this generator of a sense of community between people who, quite frankly, may not even speak the same literal language. But we have this, you know, this universal language there that really is indeed healing. And what was beautifully ironic was to do all of this really sort of in the shadow of course, all of the classic artifacts of ancient Greece. You know, you're right there by the Parthenon.
Oh, yes.
You know, and
oh,
all of
my
it,
goodness.
You know, the ancient Greeks would not have looked at anything of substance without the modality of art as part of the conversation. Art is part of diplomacy. You know, when you think about classical culture, you know, it's part of diplomacy, it's part of human connection, and it's certainly, as you say, part of medical healing. So I think that was, it was fascinating to, again, just bring the arts into, you know, directly into people's lives in the street and, you know, in this very extreme situation, which is the refugee situation, and see, wow, you know, how can we use this time-tested essence of creativity? How can we bring that to bear on this 21st century moment?
Right. Yeah. And, you know, it would seem to me that this really was sort of a uniting effort. I mean, with music and the pianos, you were able to bring people together in a way that, you know, might have been difficult to do otherwise. I mean, they're there physically in a space, but it would seem to me that the music was sort of a catalyst. Served as a catalyst, a way to really unite them, bring them together so that they can share this common bond of the appreciation and the love of music. Being a volunteer artist and going into the healthcare facilities, I'm aware that some of the residents and some of the patients really appreciate us being there, and you can see the joy on some of their faces. I've wondered if you have ever gotten any feedback from any of the patients, residents, site coordinators even. I was wondering if you can share some testimonials with us.
I should begin by saying you know, as you have said, there's nothing new under the sun. Italy didn't invent this. And there are many wonderful organizations working in this space. Concerts in Motion, Jennifer Finn is a wonderful, beautiful musical artist, beautiful soprano and violinist and teacher who has been doing incredible work through Mount Sinai initially, but I think now all over the city, where she brings music to homebound people and all different sorts of populations. And of course, there's the wonderful musicians on call. There are all sorts of wonderful, you know, we have wonderful fellow travelers in this work. But, you know, I have to say, with Sing for Hope, we just, again, started somewhat organically. I think we just thought, okay, you know, let's see what happens if we go and knock on a door, a hospital door, because choice is a big part of this. You know, one of the things we always hasten to do is to be very intentional in confirming that indeed the music is wanted and welcome.
Sure.
So we do that. And we also do, of course, a lot of things in the sort of atrium spaces, the public spaces that are more kind of lend themselves more easily to communal creativity, yes. Like, for example, mask making and visual arts as well, painting, responsive painting, all sorts of things. But all of that said, you know, it's so funny. There are just so many different stories, but I'll share one just from recently. About a month ago, I had the pleasure of going to visit our wonderful partners at ADAPT, which was formerly United Cerebral Palsy of New York. It's now called ADAPT.
Okay.
And their Inwoods location is so special. All of their locations are so special, but we really have had this super fun relationship with that particular campus. And the folks from ADAPT have come to the Sing for Hope Center downtown and have created their own pianos in past years. So in fact, they have this gorgeous blue and white piano. It looks like a Wedgwood teacup. It's this like amazing looking piano that their constituents have created in years past. And we were there sharing a wonderful new show that we're doing. We have some scripted concerts, which are really very special. And Carol Berman, the wonderful woman who runs Healing Arts for Sing for Hope, she has been working with our artists to create these scripted concerts where, you know, obviously they're sort of tied, the songs are tied together through narration. And in particular, the concerts focus on particular bodies of repertoire that we feel would really resonate with the audiences that we're working with. So, you know, it was just so much fun to hear people singing and getting super involved. And there's this one woman, Cheryl, who always takes a moment to really have her own solo. And she has this exquisite, delicate voice. And she will sing these songs to us, which really, I mean, it's one of my greatest inspirations, you know, in any concert experience has been there at ADAPT in this communal room with Cheryl singing to all of us, you know. So I think that's one thing that I always just love so much. And then, you know, I have to say we really cherish the quotes that folks share with us. I mean, there was an amazing gentleman who shared with us the fact that he had been waiting for a transplant, an organ transplant. Mm. It just been an interminable time that he had been in the hospital, and it was actually over the holiday season. And he just said, you know, really this, you know, sharing this music with you all and hearing you all sing, it's the first time I felt human in a long time. That just meant the world. And I think then, for me personally, one of my most powerful experiences that I will share was actually really many years ago at the former St. Vincent's, yes. Which now I believe has become or is in the process of becoming condominiums, somewhat controversially in New York City, but you know was one of the nation's older healthcare facilities that specifically provided a lot of palliative care for AIDS patients.
Right.
And I had the immense honor of singing for a gentleman that the staff had told me would likely pass that day. And they asked, you know, they said, we do want to share with you that there is a gentleman here. He's in his room alone. Knowing him and knowing the kind of person he is, we sense that he would appreciate some music. And I was actually with a wonderful guitarist that I collaborate with sometimes, Jem Duduoz. And we went in, and I still remember the light streaming into this room, and this man who was very clearly sort of going between realms at this point, but he wanted, he wanted the music, and he really connected with me through his eyes. And I just sang a couple of very simple songs. The Water is Wide. I think I sang a very simple Spanish song as well. And honestly, I when I think about performances in my life, if you can even call that a performance, I would say that is the one that maybe I will remember always more than any other one, because it was just such an honor to be with him in that way at that moment and to feel that energy come through me and just that sense of peace that music can bring all of us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I can empathize with that kind of experience in particular in the work that I do in hospice and palliative medicine.
Right.
So it is, it's hard to articulate.
Absolutely. It's such a beautiful thing that I'm so thankful that we live in a world with so many different forms of spiritual communion. And, you know, that's one of the great joys of living in New York City is you have every different form of prayer, every different form of religion, every different form of philosophy, every different kind of operating system for, you know, working in the world. But at the same time, I do think because we are so beautifully diverse at this point in our evolution as a country, we have, you know, by necessity, good. We've peeled out spiritual dialogue from public conversation. That is as it should be. That is as it must be. But at the same time, the spirit is still there going,
Yeah, what it means. That's right.
Absolutely. And I do think of these, you know, these moments that, you know, and you're not going to get more extreme life moments than you get in the hospital.
Absolutely.
You know, you'll never.
People at their most vulnerable.
People at their most vulnerable.
Oh.
You know, and in sharing music in this way, in sharing painting in this way, what we can share is love. You know, it's just this direct way of pouring love on another human being, as crazy as that sounds.
But that's what it is.
That's what it is. No, it's such an exchange of gratitude and an affirmation of what's good in us. And I think, especially right now, Sadella, I swear, I don't even know. I don't know if it's me, if I have too many Apple news alerts showing up on my phone all the time with the chaos of the world, but it really does feel like, and the world feels quite crazy right now, you know?
Oh, you're not alone in that feeling. I think a lot of people share that sentiment, including myself.
Right. It's such a funny thing, Sadella, because I mean, I'm a deeply, crazily optimistic person and a very positive person. But, you know, I feel like my nerves are a little on edge from the local dialogue right now. And, you know, to have these just simple human moments and just to remember that, oh, yes, oh, we absolutely are
so
good.
Precious.
We are good.
So precious.
You know,
they are so precious.
Like, they are really so precious. Yeah. It's exactly right.
Absolutely. You know, You delivered the commencement speech at the Juilliard School this past spring, and I would like to congratulate you on that achievement as well.
Thank you. That was wonderfully surreal.
I bet. But I commend you. Beautifully delivered. Really, it
Thank
was.
You for the help.
In your speech, you mentioned the concept of citizen artistry.
Yes.
I think I have a sense of what that is, but I'd like you to explain what that is and the role that it can play in promoting wellness.
Right. Absolutely. You know, I just think, again, it's, you know, coming back to the idea that there's nothing new under the sun. You know, this is the essential role of the artist. If you look at kind of the de facto play out of so many social movements, of so many historical eras, so many moments, frankly, when humans were at our best, and we still have these moments every day. I'm not saying that we don't have these beautiful best moments currently right now on this planet. We do. But, you know, when you think about kind of ideal models for society, so often there is that role of creativity as galvanizing what's positive. First of all, the sense of solace and then just comfort, but also, frankly, positive transformation. And I think that the role of the artist has always been that. So to define a citizen artist is simply to say that, like, let's lean right back into that. It's where we come from, the artists and the creatives of society. We come from a place originally of, you know, sort of being the light that shines the path forward. And I think there has been a, you know, some of this has happened just naturally over the last century in this country, where kind of people kind of pulled the arts into silos and into areas of specialization. And that's all well and good. Again, no malice was intended. There was there was nobody trying to sort of set up a conspiracy that the arts wouldn't be broadly available. Right. But the long and short was that, you know, slowly but surely, arts began to be peeled out of public schools. Slowly but surely, we began to have a sort of a consumerist culture relationship with the arts and a monetized relationship with the arts, which is fine. As someone who, you know, makes my living as a performing artist, I feel very thankful for that in many ways. At the same time, art is bigger than that. Art also can move really huge global goals. And so it's just about kind of tweaking the value proposition. The value proposition of the arts and of artists is not just museums and theaters. It's also life. It's also the street. It's also the hospital. It's also the school. And it's not that I don't believe that art for art's sake, art in a theatrical setting is important. Of course it is. But art is so enormous that it's important in other places as well. And I think that's the essential piece of citizen artistry. It's just the idea that we, as civic participants in this communal life, that we bring our creativity to bear. I should also really hasten to say that, you know, I talk about the artists and the creatives. That means all of us, to be very clear. I don't feel that that is some elite category. I happen to be lucky enough to have these great degrees from this wonderful school and all of that. But really, we are all artists. That is very, very clear. You know, I think it's just allowing ourselves the space and the time and the intentionality, that the intention has to be there. Because otherwise, frankly, the default setting is not necessarily creativity. The default setting tends to be, you know, efficiency and accumulation. Yes, that's right. And those things are fine. It's not to demonize those things. Those are fine. I hope to be efficient and accumulate all of those things myself.
But you're right. That's not the default. That's not the way that, you know, we are sort of socialized and programmed, so to speak, for the most part.
Right. That's exactly right. So, and yet, you know, you give people these little lodestars, these little moments and these ways to be creative together. And wow, you know, what starts to happen is really a good, you know, it really is. And it moves the needle on these big old mysterious quote unquote problems that we're having right now. You know, gosh, people, you know, there's more and more loneliness. There's an epidemic of loneliness in cities. Well, what if we have literally creative spaces? What if you take, you know, the park down the street at the corner and allow there to be an intentional moment for people to set aside their devices? Devices are fine. You can even keep your device with you. But the point is, like, also look into people's eyes, share something in real time as well.
No, absolutely. And I think it's, you know, you raise the point that it is that we can all play a role. As long as the intention is there, the desire to share is there, we can all play a role. And it really doesn't matter. Your socioeconomic status is irrelevant. Your educational background is irrelevant. Because I will say one of the great things that I've noticed in being a Sing for Hope volunteer is that I've met people, artists who have a whole lot of formal training and artists who have none.
That makes me so happy to hear you say that. Yeah. It's such a special thing. Yes. How that just, you know, again, it just evolved that way, you know, and there's such like co-inspiration that happens, you know, there's such this back and forth and mixing of genres and mixing, as you say, of levels of training and all of that.
I have yet to hear a resident or a patient ask any artist, you know, where'd you train? Where did you?
Boy, that's hard. That's so true.
I see them all just exactly appreciating the love and the gifts that we offer. And it's, again, just so special.
Oh, Sidel, that's so well said. And I can't tell you how much I appreciate that. You know, it's a funny thing. You know, it almost seems kind of crazy if you think about it that you wouldn't have the arts in the healing setting when you phrase it like that. You know,
it totally has a place.
It brings out what's best in us, and Absolutely. There's this great Picasso quote, whether he actually said it or whether someone put those words in his mouth, who knows? But the quote I love, which is that it took me my whole life to learn how to make art like a child. And it's so good, right? Because it's so true. I mean, that in itself is affirmation of the fact that, my goodness, yes, we're all such creatives. We're all such artists. Because look at the little kid. Look how they approach the world. Look at, you know, in some spiritual traditions, there's that expression that, you know, the children are the closest to God. There is something about that. The children just create. They just, you know, they just connect and they create. And, you know, there's really, I think there's a lot of wisdom to that. And yet, you know, I do think just, you know, societally, we have to put systems in place. You know, we're a city that, you know, you have so many people living together, you have to put in traffic lights, for example. Well, by the same token, we have to put in moments for communal connection, and in particular, things that make us see what's good in each other. This is a moment when we have to connect across divisions, because it seems like with every passing moment, we're further retreating into our own echo chambers and just surrounding ourselves with like-minded people on social media and then wondering why
we're so divided. Yeah.
And exactly. You know, and I think to be able to have these sort of intentional moments for connection and creativity, that is a path forward that we must pursue.
100%. 100%. And this is why I felt that it was so appropriate and so fitting to have you as my guest today on this episode of the podcast. Thank you so much. Thank you for
being here with us and sharing
your talent, your gifts, your love with so many.
I can't thank you enough, Sidel. You're an inspiration, and it's, you know, you're just further proof that I think we are, you know, the fact that you and I are only now meeting and you know, and that we've both been drawn to this kind of work, and we are just among the many, you know, I think you really prove out the thesis, which is that this is just a great way to connect with yourself and with other people, and that sharing creativity, you know, you got to take that
Absolutely.
Leap, you know, you got to take that initial step. Just a great
Absolutely.
Thing to add to your life.
It makes it so much richer. I feel, at least.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I definitely do. And it's so true. So to that end, Sidel, I will say that you probably mentioned this already, but singforhope.org, we welcome everyone. And, you know, anybody who wants to come and participate in our programs, or if you are at a school or a hospital and want to invite our programs in, you know, obviously we're a nonprofit. So if you want to donate and show your love that way, you know, there's so many ways to be involved. And we just, Sidel, thank you for
Absolutely.
Helping us continue to
Absolutely.
Get the word out.
And I wish you and Monica, Eunice, and all of your partners and collaborators, you know, continued success in all your endeavors to share the gift of music with others, both near and far. And please, Sing for Hope, singforhope.org. Please visit the website so that you will learn more about the organization, and please get involved. I think that you will find it so worthwhile. Folks, thank you.
Wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Camille. Really has been a pleasure. And I hope that you'll join us again. I hope this won't be the first and last time that...
Thank you, Sidel.
Thank
that,
you all. That I have
that
you
would be my joy.
Program.
Would be my
thank
pleasure.
Thank you again.
I would love to.
So everyone, that brings us to the end of today's episode. Thank you all for tuning in. And I hope you will be able to join me next month for episode 4. Until then, take care of yourselves and one another.